Indeed, the sun is coming. You know, that's something NASA has been predicting for a long time. How far it's coming and how much of the sun is coming, that's the debate we're talking about. Solar cycle 24. I have some stuff to read from NASA on this, lest you think this is just all sort of skewed doom and gloom material that has no basis in scientific fact. I've done a little research on this. And I'll pull that up here in just a second with Dr. John J. Harper. By the way, thanks for getting that one, Kiris. And walking on the sun last hour, great bumper. Although it may feel like the sun's going to be walking on us when you actually hear even what NASA says we should be prepared for next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, I just want to go back a little bit. I'm on the NASA website, Dr. John J. Harper. I know this is not new information for you. March 20th, 2003, NASA study finds increasing solar trend that can change climate. They talk about how the Earth's atmosphere has been heating up every decade since the 1970s, and the increasing number of solar flares that were expected as well, right? Then we go back to 2006, just 2 years ago. Well, actually, a little over a year ago, December 21st, 2006, solar cycle 24, due to peak in 2010 or 2011, quote, looks like it's going to be one of the most intense cycles since record keeping began almost 400 years ago, says solar physicist David Hathaway. That's the guy you quoted earlier, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
He and colleague Robert Wilson presented this conclusion at the American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco. Then they go in to talk about that this forecast is based on historical records of geomagnetic storms. And this is what it says here. When a gust of solar wind hits Earth's magnetic field, the impact causes the magnetic field to shake. If it shakes hard enough, we call it a geomagnetic storm. In the extreme, these storms can cause power outages and make compass needles swing in the wrong direction. Auroras are a beautiful side effect, but they're looking at records of geomagnetic activity stretching back 150 years. And notice the amount of geomagnetic activity now tells us what the next solar cycle is going to be like 6 to 8 years in the future. Well, we're in that future now because they're saying this next solar cycle 24, which we just entered into, is going to be peaking in 2011. And looking at their scientific data on this, the curves as they see them both historically and as they're projecting them, this will be the highest peaking series of solar waves since record keeping ever was kept, and as high as they can possibly imagine the sun doing. So, I mean, looking at this here, this is just NASA stuff from 2, 3 years ago, and they're saying we were going to be where we are right now. And we just entered into this period of solar cycle 24. Dr. John J. Harper is our guest. Let me ask you, as you hear this data again, as I'm sort of recapitulating this for you, what is it that you hear differently than most of us who, you know, we hear about sunbursts or something, or if our cell phones didn't work for a couple hours, we find out on the news later on, well, there was a solar flare. It's over. We're not too worried about it. What do you hear differently in it?
I think the basic disconnect that most of us have is we feel we're separate from the environment most days. We get connected when there's a huge storm, but otherwise we don't really sense that what the sun is doing is impacting the geomagnetic field, and we are that field. In other words, our consciousness and our body, our heart rhythms, our biorhythms, our sleep cycles, our consciousness itself is linked to the geomagnetic field of the Earth and beyond to the sun, and some would have us to believe to the galactic center. I don't have any problem with that, but I spent 25 of my years with the Department of Defense as an electronics specialist, an engineer, a research scientist, a computer software engineer, and that is the background I used to connect the dots because of this, Ian. Most scientists in my generation, this goes back to the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and prior especially, were basically linked into the classical physics model, and that, in essence, said that the universe was not electric. Well, now we've got great minds out there, and I know most of them have probably been on Coast to Coast AM with you, but there's the electric universe theory, and that means that you now have a connection to the sun, to the electric sun model. And Robert Becker, MD, is someone who comes to mind right away when you ask me this question. Robert Becker worked for the Veterans Administration, and he wrote a real landmark book called The Body Electric. And in that book, he was showing how healing, for example, is linked to electromagnetic fields. Well, now, let's just give this idea here a little bit more oomph by saying that if the sun is really kind of revolting, going into a violent spasm, if you will, with flares and coronal mass ejections, that will trickle down in very real ways to every creature on this planet. So biologists talk about the great extinction that's going on with certain species. We're seeing all kinds of physical health problems. We're seeing new outbreaks of diseases that we've never seen in our lifetimes before around the world, different viral bacterial infections, for example. Well, the theory is that if the sun is not stable, then it's going to destabilize everything, everything organic, everything living. And, you know, many of us that have looked at this say, of course, that's exactly what's happening. But when the general population doesn't know this and correlates this information, thinking they're separate from nature, then there's going to be a real problem. And the sensitivity, this is the key, I think, to the spiritual side. I see that there is sensitivity building. There is a paranormal, if you will, sensitivity building to different phenomena. And then, of course, some scientists are linking this to ghost sightings, for example, to give you just kind of a fringe aspect of this. But I think that this is going to become more and more mainstream, that if you understand that the universe and the sun and the earth and we are electric beings, then that's where we're going to tie this together.
Well, and this the thing that we're all waves, we're all electronic waves in one form or another, connects us all theoretically. But as you said, when we get into a situation where this solar cycle may be at its most prominent, it could break us down into smaller groups of people, smaller communities banded together for survival that I believe you described as pre-industrial. So, all right, so if we see that coming, if that really is what's coming, what is already happening that leads you to believe that it is as bad as you think it is? And let's bring in the volcanoes into this, which we haven't talked about.
Yes. One of the key insights that I was given when I started this study many, many years ago, back in the late 80s and early 1990s in particular, I started looking at what does change the climate the most dramatically. And it's interesting, my son-in-law at the time was a Marine aboard the USS Peleliu, and he was taken to Mount Pinatubo in the Philippine Islands to, you know, render assistance. And I think a lot of folks listening to us will remember that a couple years thereafter, you know, there was a great cooling effect globally. So I started looking at this, and I never really connected the dots before, to tell you the truth. Geology was not my main focus as an engineer, as an electronics engineer in school at the University of Alabama at that time. And so I was really deficient. And I started studying geophysics real seriously then, and I realized that it's volcanoes that throw the ash up in the air that would ultimately cool a planet very quickly. And so I started looking at how many volcanoes are there on the surface and how many are underneath the surface. Well, I came across some interesting insights from folks, from shamans, for example. I started, you know, doing research in all types of main and unorthodox ways. And folks started telling me that, well, shamans say that there's going to be a huge undersea volcanic event. And this, of course, led over a period of years to realizing this was all tied into 2012. But the quick of this is that if we have enough volcanoes going off simultaneously, let's say on the Ring of Fire, which I believe many are picking up on and becoming sensitive to, we realize that this is going to have a profound cooling effect on the Earth. So I see global warming, in other words, in solar cycle 24, then the flip side, global cooling, being triggered by volcanic eruptions. So I believe there, somewhere in there, there's the truth. I mean, the severity, I think, can be argued, but in terms of this happening, I don't personally believe that this is ever going to be disproven. I think we're going to see it right unfold right before our eyes.
And these volcanoes we're talking about right now are developing underwater.
Yeah, well, you know, there's some new research that I just put up on my website here a couple days ago on my blog, and I was even stunned by the amount of undersea volcanoes that we did not know existed. Totally, there seems to be about 3 million, as they call them, submarine volcanoes that are on the floor bed of the oceans around the Ring of Fire in particular. And so 300,000, however, give or take, of those were not known until recently, until the buoys and the different data collection points come in about the ocean warming. And we've even had a scientist now recently, again, talk about the idea there may be a volcano under Greenland. We had mentioned the melting of the ice caps as part of this overall Earth change scenario for 2012. And now there's some real hard evidence that perhaps a volcano is erupting underneath the ice poles, polar ice caps, and this is triggering this massive meltdown that now NASA itself is saying, if it continues, it will melt the entire Greenland ice cap by the summer of 2012. The interesting point from my perspective, they said 2008 is going to be a pivotal year. Some scientists are saying that cooling will happen, and I noticed that some in the United Kingdom, for example, some scientists are saying that even though there's global warming, that 2008 may be a cooler year. However, then there's all that always that caveat. They're saying it's still going to be one of the hottest 10 years, hottest years in 10 years. So in the last 10 years. So there's a great debate going on, and that's where we need to stay tuned, is to see, does 2008 bring us more erratic behavior, in temperature, seasonal events? I mean, will we be able to plant the crops in the spring as normal in the United States? That to me is one of the things I'm looking at. Will we experience spring flooding to the point that our farmers in the Midwest cannot plant their crops? Because this is a pressure point, food production, that I see is going to be a crisis, and I think we'll see it this year.
Right, but how is it that you imagine that a society like the Mayans were able to nuance this sort of astronomical data out of their available, universe of information that they had back then? How do you think they came to some sort of conclusion about the year 2012 back before anybody even had an understanding, per se, even a modern scientific understanding of solar cycles?
I believe that the consciousness itself is a evolving phenomenon that goes from full consciousness, not lack of consciousness, full consciousness, and then devolves into unconsciousness, basically, and then goes back up. And so this is something that, is of course being considered by many. Michael Cremo was the one that brought this to the fore with human devolution, the idea that the archaeological and anthropological evidence suggests that we're really beings of light or angels, if you will, and that we devolve, come down to this planet, and slowly lose our mind. This is, of course, Plato, and you get into philosophy, you talk about amnesia, that we're suffering from a loss or a forgetting of the way the world works. I subscribe personally to that theory. I do not believe in the Darwinian theory anymore. I believe there's certainly some truth there, as there is in almost every complex subject. However, I see, to specifically answer your question, I see that there was like breadcrumbs left along the way, and the sacred sites, for example, in Egypt and in Central America with the Mayans. I believe those are, as John Anthony West himself has said, those are legacies. Those were left behind as breadcrumbs, if you will, to allow others that come after to wake up and realize the sacred geometry relationship of the Earth to the Sun and the Milky Way galaxy. And again, I sense that shamanism, those who have their third eye open, who can see the energy fields and actually see and sense and feel connected to the environment, know beyond a doubt that this is what is important, and that's why they spend so much time sharing it in myths and stories that come down to us through the sacred scriptures.
All right. End time 2012 is what the Mayan calendar predicted, but it doesn't say how, and so this could be one explanation for why those two things are connected. How bad can the solar flares be before how bad can they be? I mean, what are we looking at here in terms of what could be the worst case scenario for a solar flare, or what do they call them? A corona? What do they call that? What's
corona
the other type?
Mass ejection, a CME, corona right. mass ejection. And the worst case scenario would be when one of these events actually triggered on the sun with a direct alignment, in other words, with the Earth. If the sun was directly pointed at the Earth from that particular eruption on the sun, this huge magnetic ball of fire, if that field of energy, if solar energy was thrown, if you will, at us as a direct hit, say to the center point of the Earth, it could destroy the entire telecommunications grid, as well as NASA even puts radiation alerts up for the astronauts, and they have a shutdown procedure where they actually, hibernate the electronics as well as the astronauts to protect them in certain compartments on the International Space Station. Well, where would we go? I mean, I guess those who have access to caves would be at the best, possible position to survive this. But yes, many, many could perish, literally burn from the inside out like a microwave, if you will, at the cellular level.
Now, why a cave as opposed to a house?
Well,
how thick would a house have to be? No basement could protect you?
Well, that would be something someone who actually could meter how much protection you have. I know, for example, a few inches of concrete does provide some type of protection. But again, if we're talking about something where you're losing the protective magnetosphere, you're talking about cosmic radiation that would change DNA, that would there be genetic mutations. And just like anyone exposed to radar, for example, in our military, when I was in the military and worked around radar, we had to be very careful because, you'd end up with leukemia basically years down the road and other disorders. But the point is, yes, it would be catastrophic for that immediate area where that burst of energy reached you. But in terms of protection now, any kind of deep underground facility, this is why we build nuclear hardened bunkers, for example. It's the radiation, the electromagnetic burst that we're trying to protect you from. And so, again, it would be something like that, but without the residual radiation.
Don't say mutation around my X-Men obsessed 14-year-old, because he'd be running around outside in his shorts trying to become Wolverine or something.
I've got some grandsons like that, too. So.
Yeah. All right, but this idea about the solar flares again, that were these massive ejections. How soon would we know they were coming? I mean, how early can they be detected? How much warning might we have?
Well, you notice at spaceweather.com, you see that as there's even a hint of something going on the other side of the sun, and as they talk about the rotation factor, they can calculate where that sunspot is becoming visible, and then they can calculate when it will turn towards us, and again, they can map that.
Okay, but I mean, how much warning typically might we have if we see something evolving on the surface of the sun? Is it minutes? Is it hours? Is it days before we would be faced with well, I'll tell you what, you hang on to that thought, and I'll come back to you if you need to do some computations on that. We're talking with Dr. John J. Harper, the editor-in-chief of Reality Press. His resume is, of course, very full, as he's already mentioned. He had some unique experiences which bring him to answer these questions. A retired electronics engineer, computer specialist, and clinical mental health counselor with the U.S. Department of Defense. He's also a registered hypnotherapist and worked in the Naval Underseas Warfare Center. We're talking about Solar Cycle 24. NASA and other agencies have already acknowledged it's already started. What will it really mean, though? We'll talk more about that next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Dr. John J. Harper can be wrong on so many aspects of this Solar Cycle 24 prediction, but if he's right on even a few of them, it's pretty scary. We're looking ahead at the Solar Cycle 24, which has just begun. It's something which scientists have been mapping and predicting for years, expecting will be the worst solar cycle in terms of solar activity and some of the flares and the mass coronal emissions that could be coming to us here on Earth in recorded history. Now, how bad does that get? That's the debate. What exactly does that mean for us, say, by the year 2012? And were the Mayans onto something? Were they able to detect this at some unconscious level, or maybe some superconscious level that led them to think that everything would be cycled into a new form of existence after this solar cycle? It's possible. All these things are possible. What we do know, though, is pretty startling. And we'll continue to explore some of the aspects of these solar cycles, the other seismic activity, and some of the volcanoes that are out there right now that we're just learning about, which could catch us kind of on both ends in this next solar cycle. Will you be prepared? On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Dr. John J. Harper, let's pick up that conversation then, just where we left off. When we're getting these solar flares, if we got one of these solar flares or one of these, coronal mass emissions that are coming our way, if we had one of those, would it also then flip the electric poles?
Yes, that is certainly one theory. And to specifically answer your question about the timing pulse aspect, this is why I mentioned the electric sun idea and electric cosmos, because, you know, we got to stop thinking linear if we're going to really capture the full impact of what we're trying to, the picture we're trying to paint here. For example, resonance in circuitry in electronics, you can have a resonant circuit, it's like ringing a bell, and across the room, a bell at that particular frequency would ring. And so, if the electric cosmos is a fact, then if you have this huge explosion on the sun, it doesn't have to go necessarily be pointed directly at the Earth. It would still impact, say, the core, the molten iron core of the Earth. Think of, like I said, a couple old vacuum tubes. You know, we've got vacuum of space surrounding us, and you got the vacuum of space surrounding the sun. So if this huge electronic pulse were to really catch us by surprise, it could literally trigger not only a pole shift, it could trigger this huge volcanic eruptions of many, many of these undersea volcanoes and surface volcanoes, and in itself lead to a new ice age. So there's kind of the big model and the concern that I have, because I see this personally as a reality. This is not a theory anymore, and I'm doing things such as growing my own food now. I'm setting up my own hydroponic systems. I'm looking very diligently at power backup systems. I mean, the types of things I'm sure that Coast to Coast AM folks have considered for other events since 9/11, but I think that probably was maybe just a warm-up to what the big event is coming in or about 2012.
Okay. And so, again, we're talking, this would be the elimination of mass communications as we know it. We would be sort of in a pre-industrial state. Going back to that question, though, of how much warning might we have? Once we start to see something, do you know if it's minutes or is it hours between when a solar flare will happen and when we will experience it?
Usually what spaceweather.com will do, will put out a report, and usually within 24 hours, so you'll have approximately at least a few hour warning to shut systems down. But remember, light travels at 186 miles, 1,000 miles per second. So at 93 million miles distance from the sun, we're talking, you know, 7, 8, 9 minutes in terms of traveling distance if you do this, you know, at light speed. So theoretically, I mean, you know, you're going to see the first wave within minutes hitting the magnetosphere, but that's what buffers us from getting the full impact. And then as the radiation builds. So just think of water actually traveling, you know, like a tsunami. This is equivalent to a tsunami on our ocean and shorelines, having this huge, massive ball of energy being thrust at us. So that's, you know, that's kind of the bottom line. You have from minutes to maybe 24 hours at best.
Okay. And so already, though, we're seeing an increase in the amount of solar activity. That's already been documented.
Yes, in fact, this is catching on. I mean, right now you can go and probably do a Google search. You're gonna pick up data being printed in Moscow, China, all the major countries in the scientific community at the university level, all the solar physicists, the geophysicists, the folks that look at this stuff. They're all slowly coming on board, and actually they're coming on board faster than I thought they would. There's really a lot of discussion going on in the background about how severe this could get, and I know that there's even some private independent science agencies that are contracted to NASA. They're giving their worst case scenario, I understand, to the government, to the Bush administration, to the House and Senate, and they're stating that this could be a very, very serious event.
Well, I wonder who wants to be president for this next cycle. I mean, yes. I'm really serious. This would be the kind of one you might want to sit out as president, or either that or that all of the presidential candidates ought to be briefed.
Yeah.
So when they step into office, they're ready to go and know that this is a distinct possibility, not necessarily the worst case scenario, which can happen, but that even just for all of these increased episodes to be happening, it's going to complicate anybody's administration.
My understanding is that this is happening, Ian.
Oh, they really are
being briefed. They are being briefed.
Who would do the briefing on that?
NASA.
Really?
Yes.
And they would
solar science departments. Yes.
And they would pull aside the main, you know, go-to people for all of the candidates, or did they go to the candidates themselves?
Well, I don't know the inner politics, but I can tell you that you know, NASA director reports directly to a cabinet, you know, science board, and those folks would arrange that type of briefing, and it would certainly be classified, and it would certainly be, you know, just an option, you know, in terms of this might happen type thing. But my understanding is, just from the little communication I'm getting from folks that I know within the Defense Department and that community that I used to work in, these types of scenarios are being looked at quite seriously, and I do believe that we have agencies in our government, with the Navy, for example, and the Air Force, and the Army. I mean, all of our armed forces would be impacted by lack of communications. I mean, think about all our weapon systems that are tied to a grid in some form or another through a computer.
Are we responsible for any of this? As you see it, I mean, a lot of folks would say, well, is this another aspect of global warming, or is there something that we've done that would trigger this worsening of the solar cycle?
I think that is really open for debate, but I'm leaning more and more towards the idea that we absolutely do have some impact, and it's going to tie through consciousness. And that's because I'm sensing that plasma physics, or this new idea that zero-point energy fields is what we're really talking about in terms of consciousness, and that then would be coupled through resonance to electromagnetic fields. And without getting too technical, the bottom line here is, yes, we would have some impact. In other words, if we could take 6 billion people on this planet and get us all to agree for a moment that we do not want to destroy this planet through a huge solar event, theoretically, I could see where that might be possible now, and that would be because that this unified field of consciousness that is the Earth would in turn feed back in some feedback loop mechanism, again through resonance, not a direct connection, but this spooky action at a distance, as Albert Einstein called it in quantum physics, this idea that, yes, we do have some say in this.
Could we have... Is any force then, if we're looking at this sort of cosmically, and I mean that with a kind of a small c, cosmically, if we're looking at this in a sense of interconnectivity between us and the planet and our consciousness, and is there anybody that's got our back? I mean, is there anything that we could call on that we could in your perception of what's happening that might come and save our butt?
Well, I can tell you this, the folks that I've interviewed for over 15 years that have had some very powerful spiritual experiences that I've documented in my book say yes, absolutely, that prayer, for example, is a power, and that there are beings that are very concerned about the survival of this planet, that indeed this is what it's all about. The end game is to survive. We are not here to be beat up or to self-destruct. And my understanding is that we've got to come to this idea, this sense that we're connected to everything, and that we've got to really, you know, as I say, pull our head out of our past real quick now.
Okay, but could you be more specific then about who it is that we should be praying with? Because I love that thought. I just want to know, I want to make sure we got the right people lined up.
Well, you know, I'll state it kind of objectively and then personally, subjectively. Objectively, I've talked to a lot of folks that had near-death experiences who said, yes, we need to pray to God and ask for divine intervention. And folks like Ned Doherty, who was in my book, Daniel Brinkley, and so on and so forth. The list goes on. Mellon Thomas Benedict, and on we go with the whole list of near-deathers, Phyllis Atwater. All of these folks, I think, are of the opinion that, yes, we can make a difference. My personal opinion, amen, absolutely, no doubt about it whatsoever. However, can we get anybody to agree on anything? Just look at the presidential debates. I heard our former energy secretary of New Mexico, Richardson, say, you know, he's seen more congeniality in hostage negotiations than, among the candidates. So there you go.
Okay, but I mean, so are there people, I mean, I love the idea, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the idea of an all-loving, all-knowing God. I don't know why we would have to petition God to save us from this if God, in God's omnipotence and omniscience, knows that it's going to happen and knows that, you know, tens of millions, if not 100 million people might suffer from it. I mean, if there's a magic number that we have to get in a prayer chain or something like that, let's line it up right now and avoid all this.
Well, I believe that this is going to happen, and unfortunately, it seems like fear-driven behavior is what we respond to mostly at this level of consciousness or unconsciousness. But, you know, for example, I mean, I don't want to get into too much of the philosophy because I know we don't have time for it tonight, but the idea that we are co-created in the image of the Creator tells me that I'm somewhat responsible. I have free will or agency, as we say. And, you know, if we're so scatterbrained that we don't even know to get off the tracks when the train's coming and you hear the siren, you hear the whistle, you see the light, you know, how conscious are you? And you know, what good would it do maybe to educate you quickly that the train is going to take you out? I mean, maybe there's a benign aspect to this, I guess is what I'm saying. Maybe the pandemics that others or physicians are talking about, and then I sense as well, maybe that's some type of grace. Literally, I mean, maybe if you go quickly in a 24-hour pandemic and you thin the population down to the point that we can live in small communities, raise our own food, go back to this pre-industrial, as I say, shamanic way of living, maybe that is a grace.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. At least it would be to the survivors. I don't know that it would be.
Or maybe not.
People.
Maybe it's the folks that are taken are right. Maybe they're the ones that are going to be raptured, right?
Well, you know, that would be an interesting conversation, is if there were a solar flare. And as you said, it would be as though we were, if we're people who are outside, that they were literally like microwaved. on the spot. I wonder whether that would correlate to the perception that some people have about the Perugia.
I think so. Yes, absolutely. And I have looked at this, and I've written considerably about these ideas. So if folks are looking at things that I write to be scientific, they'll be disappointed, although I do integrate that into the spiritual aspect. But no, I try to reach the happy point and integrate science and religion into everything I do, because that is who I am. That is what the data, scientists talk about data-driven. Well, I'm kind of a philosopher or a theologian, if you will, an amateur at this, but I'm driven by the data too, and it still tells me that we are, a spiritual light being.
Okay. Well, we're about like a little kind of maybe a weak flashlight being compared to the light that we're talking about.
Yeah, we're like AA batteries.
Yeah, and one that's been left on for too long, maybe.
Maybe.
All right, so let's put that aside for the time being. We'll maybe get to some of that coming up when we take questions. Looking ahead, John J. Harper, by the way, the book is Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. But the DVD that he has on there is Science of the Soul, The End Time Solar Cycle of Chaos in 2012. And we haven't really talked about chaos in regard to this. We sort of talked around it a little bit, but we would be looking at a chaotic world if the solar cycle 24 is as bad as it could be predicted to be.
Yes, and it doesn't even have to be as bad as the worst-case scenario. All it has to do is, say, take out a major node or network. Back in the 80s, we had a solar flare that took down the Canadian power grid, did a tremendous amount of damage in the Quebec province, I believe. And so, all we have to do is take a few nodes down. Think about e-commerce, for example. Just think if Amazon went down. Just think if, all the interconnectivity with a coast-to-coast AM, God forbid,
right,
went down. Just think of the impact on millions of people almost instantaneously. This, could bring an economy to its knees very quickly.
Yep. Well, it would definitely hurt our broadcast schedule. I know that. Well, what is, as you see it, though, too, is that the worst of it? I mean, Art Bell last night was talking about the possible bird flu pandemic, that still looms out there. And there are a couple other types of predictions we heard on our New Year's Day night show. Is that the worst of it? I mean, do we at least now know all things that could possibly go wrong?
In my opinion, I think I know enough of them to keep me busy until 2012.
Okay.
And one of them is bird flu pandemic, and has been for a number of years. One of the reasons I even published my book was because I sensed that the bird flu pandemic would probably be the worst case scenario, and it scared me so badly that I went into that idea that, I want to protect my 11 kids and grandchildren from this if possible. My grandfather, by the way, was a Seattle police officer during World War I, and he was the one, his name was Jay Decker. My grandfather, in 1917, 18, 19, actually picked the bodies up that dropped in the street 24 hours after that avian flu started in Seattle, down in Pioneer Square. He picked up the bodies and put them in his police wagon and took them to the morgue, and he never caught the bird flu. I have an aunt that's almost 90 years old in Seattle this evening, and she told me recently that she never had the flu, and they did an antibody test on her. Her physician did years ago, because she never did ever get a viral infection her entire life, still hasn't to this day. They told her she had antibodies to these avian-type viruses. How interesting.
That is very. Can we get some of her blood?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I said, Aunt Margaret, ship it over,
Yeah, it's like the movie I Am Legend.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do. All right, so we'll get everybody's calls and questions coming up for Dr. John J. Harper, electronics engineer, medical research scientist and futurist, author of Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. What are your big concerns, or what are your observations about this coming solar cycle 24? We have entered into it. We can already see the earliest evidence of it. The possibilities are that with the discovery of increased volcanic activity under the sea, that we now are just getting a real better understanding of how many volcanoes are underneath the water right now and what might happen if some of these solar flares or these mass coronal emissions come down to Earth and trigger greater volcanic activity. That's just some of the aspects of this story, which are totally scary. And how are we going to process all of that here in this last hour? We'll leave it up to you with the phones next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.